Hi, vibing players. This is the Dominion League Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Strumpf, and this is a special interview episode. My guest is one of the top players in League. He has played in the past 40 seasons, the majority of which in B tier. He has never dropped lower than C tier and is a regular in A. He is also one of the emoji managers of the main server, making him a member of the secret emoji council. And of course, people who hang out in the music channels know him for his finely honed and exhaustive knowledge and profound love of electronic music. It is my great pleasure to present to you an interview that is mostly about music and a little bit about Dominion with Zyrix! Hello!
Hello.
Can you tell us about your username? I know that on the Discord, the Dominion Discord, you go by Zyrix, but then on other servers, you go by Ugret. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but can you tell us about the story behind that?
I mean, there's nothing really profound there. Zyrix is the name of a Singaporean electronics supply company, essentially. And so, I mean, what I've sort of pierced backwards in the story of my life is that when I was a child, I saw some piece of packaging with that name on it, because my dad worked as an electronics engineer. Mm. And then I started using it as a username in various things. And then I registered for it on Shuffle It because Ugrit was reserved because I had made a Making Fun account under that name.
Mm.
And that's basically it. There's nothing really profound about it. It's just sort of a combination of sounds that I liked.
Mm-hmm. And what is your avatar on Discord? I mean, I see your avatar, but what's the story behind that?
Yes, so the one I use on the Dominion Discord is the Coffers guy. I don't know how many people are familiar with this, but there's like a screenshot from an anime where the first panel is a woman pushing a trolley on a train, and she says, "Tea or coffee?" And then the guy who is depicted in my avatar with the sunglasses says, "Coffer." And this was very funny to me at the time that coin tokens were renamed to coffers, because I find the use of that word to be sort of humorous to me. It's I don't know. I mean, you know, Donald X is a person who is very precise with words. I mean, Dominion cards tend to have very precise wordings, and mm-hmm. calling a token coffers is just not. It's sort of slightly nonsensical English to me. So I found it humorous.
Mm. I see. Can you share a little bit about yourself, as much or as little as you like?
Sure, yeah. So I am from Canada originally. I finished my PhD in materials chemistry in 2015, I guess. And then since then, I have been living in Europe, working as a researcher, first in the UK and then in Germany and now in Switzerland. And yeah, so I've been playing Dominion since around the time Hinterlands came out. And yeah, it's just been, you know, one of my largest hobbies, I guess, since then.
Mm-hmm. And you said before we started the interview that you are currently, are you like in the nuclear reactor or like next to one?
So yeah, so I'm right next to the nuclear reactor at the moment. So I was thinking about doing this interview from inside the reactor because there's like a little office in there mm-hmm. where we're working from. We're here there for a scientific experiment, basically. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that you can't have like, you know, beverages inside the nuclear reactor. That is mm-hmm. forbidden. And mm-hmm. I thought over the course of this interview, I might want like a glass of water.
Yes.
So I decided to perform this interview in the close vicinity of the nuclear reactor instead of inside of it.
Yeah, in my head I was like, I'm pretty sure that you're from Canada, but now you live in a nuclear reactor. That's amazing.
Yes, I mean, Canada also famous for nuclear reactors. I mean, there used to be a lot of neutron science in Canada. That's sort of fallen off, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the last question of the section, which is, I think the most important is, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color is cyan, which maybe you could guess from my other Discord avatar.
Mm-hmm.
That one is just a stylized photo of me, which I like. Yeah, cyan's good. For a long time, I had a cyan role, name color on the mini Discord from running the Blitz tournaments. However, at some point we lost our Blitz timer, and so I had to. Much later than that, finally give up my nice blue name. Mm. Although the bright green from being in League is nice too. I mean, I don't mind that either. But like, this is why I will never become a Dominion League mod because I place too much value on the color of my name on the Discord.
Yeah, although I guess you could make that like a demand if they want you to join the mod team, and then you can say, well, I will, but only if you change the color to cyan.
I've considered this. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, if there was a desperate situation where mm-hmm. mods were needed, this would be my bargain basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I support this. All right. I have, as usual, prepared some warm-up questions, like some more warm-up questions, but maybe some with more or less substance. We will see. Those are 10 either-or questions. I highly encourage you to make a choice. However, if you find yourself unable to make a choice, that is okay too.
I'm very good at making decisions. I'm prepared to choose on all counts.
Oh, perfect. All right. Then here we go. Canada or Europe?
I would say Europe. The quality of life is there's more trains here. That's the real winner for me.
Perfect. Dominion or DJing?
Oh boy. I mean, I would have to say like that DJing is more irreplaceable in my life. There's more board games out there which I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Snakes or pigeons?
I mean, I would say pigeons. Pigeons are nice. I respect them as like, you know, what should we call it? I guess they're feral technically, since we domesticated them at some point, and then for the most part, I've stopped keeping them as domestic animals.
Mm. German or French?
I mean, I would have to say French. The romance languages are easier on my brain somehow.
Yeah.
I find German is. I've been sort of, you know, attempting in one way or another to learn German for quite some time now, and it goes very slowly.
Yeah, I don't envy anyone who is learning German as a foreign language. I don't remember who you played, but I remember at some point you played a German player, and they were talking like German with you, as if you like spoke it like on a like very advanced level. It's just like, oh no, poor Zurich.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was funny. I think, you know, just because I'm in the German Dominion Discord, I think I joined there at one point
mm-hmm.
for I don't even remember why.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Next question: DJ Sabrina the Teenage DJ or Karen Choir?
I mean, DJ Sabrina the Teenage DJ is, I would say, you know, the number one artist working today. Everyone out there, if you have not given her a listen, I implore you to try.
All right, hockey or foosball?
Yeah, definitely hockey. I enjoy watching football, but it's not something I really do actively that often.
Oh, I have a follow up question about that. Then, do you like what is the hockey situation in Europe like for you as a Canadian?
That's a good question. So my favorite hockey team, the Vancouver Canucks, have been bad for almost the entirety of the time I've spent living in Europe. So the fact that I do not get to watch them that often has not been super painful.
Mm.
However, they are actually good now, which has caused a dilemma and led to me staying up very late at night to watch some playoff games this year.
Aww. Do you watch any like of the European teams?
No, I've never watched European hockey. Like, I've been living in Switzerland for 3 years, and I keep meaning to like go to a Swiss hockey game someday, and it hasn't happened yet.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely not the same culture about it, I would say. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I mean, hockey in Canadian culture is definitely comparable to football in most European cultures in terms of the place it has in like culture and stuff.
Back to the warm-up questions. Hot pot or ramen?
I would say ramen. I enjoy them both a lot, but ramen gets the edge, I think.
Dominion League or the Dominion World Cup?
I mean, I get more excited about the World Cup. The World Cup is, I like the team event part of it is fun. I started the Dominion of Canada Discord at one point, which was the community of people who play Dominion from Canada based on trying to get people together for the World Cup. That's been nice. The World Cup is it's special. Dominion League is happening most of the time.
Yeah, I guess it's not the greatest of comparisons. Hot lemonade or hot chocolate?
I mean, Hot Lemonade is an amazing concept song, everything. It's hot chocolate's fine. I have nothing negative to say about it.
And finally, Dominion IRL or Dominion Online?
I would say online, just because all the sort of shuffling and things like that can be kind of annoying IRL.
Do you play IRL at all?
I mean, I used to like when I started playing. I just played sort of casually with my friends for a long time, and then I really only started playing online competitively when I moved, and then I didn't really have like a board gaming group anymore.
All right. Traditionally, I have a quiz question for you. What season did you start playing League? Do you remember?
It was 24, I think.
Oh, very close. It was 25.
25, okay, yeah. I was paying attention because I was like, oh, it must be like 30 seasons or something at some point. I think it's over 30. I have no idea what season it is now, but.
It is your 40th season now. You have been
Oh,
playing, and you have been playing 40 seasons straight, right? You have never, I don't
Yes,
think you've ever missed a season.
I've never taken a break. That is for I don't know, people who are worse at scheduling than me, I guess.
Burn. All right. Cool. I was thinking back, this is just anecdotally, but I think you were one of the first people I interacted with when I joined the Discord server and had no real idea of what to do there or like how to interact with people. And I just like I thought back on this the last couple days and thought it must have been like so weird to you, like why this random person is like talking to you and like sending you random pictures of flowers or whatever like I found, but I was like, I don't know what to do here.
I remember the random pictures of flowers too. Yeah, I mean that was like, I mean I was in Tubingen then. I mean it was like pandemic times, right? I mean everyone was sort of, yeah.
That's right. I just thought it was funny. Like if people did that to me now, I would be like, what's your deal? Like what was happening? Anywho, you already touched on this a little bit, but can you maybe tell us again when and how you started playing Dominion?
Yeah, so I just yeah, like I said, I started. I mean, I remember buying Hinterlands when it was around the time it came out. Yeah, and me and some friends that I was playing board games with, we just sort of fell in love with the game. Just like couldn't stop playing it for a while, and then there's like this thing where if you play board games with someone with some people in person, you don't want to like go online and learn all the like competitive strategies and sort of be a buzzkill like that. So I avoided sort of those things for a long time. And then yeah, I mean what got me back into it, I guess, is when Shuffle It Dominion came out and I learned about that. I was like, oh, yeah, well, that sounds interesting. I'll give this a try. And I thought the client was great, and never really looked back. I started playing competitively the 2016 Dominion Online, and I thought that was really fun. So the first competitive match of Dominion I played, I went down 0-3 and then came back and won the last four. So that was pretty exciting. And then I had a match against Marcus in the next round, and he beat me, of course. But I thought that was, he was clearly a really, really, really good player, and I thought that was pretty cool to get to do that. And so I joined the league. Not sure when I joined the league around, or it might have been after the World Cup, because I joined the World Cup. That was not long after that, and that was also a lot of fun.
Have you played DOC in the last couple of years? I didn't go back and check every year. You didn't play last year, right?
Yeah, I didn't play last year. I didn't play the year before. I kind of took a break off of that. Decided to moderate it instead. It's I think it's nice, like, if you're playing in league constantly, to have sort of the long break at some point from that sort of thing.
So, you already answered the second question too about League. Do you have like any like general thoughts about League? Is it like, do you like the format? Is there anything that you would change about it if you could?
I mean, my general thoughts are, League is really good. I don't, I think that the, like, current, like, rhythm of seasons is nice, at least when you're, like, not in a flex division. There's not a lot I would change. I mean, the things that change in League are usually, like, the way that the sort of middle to lower divisions are structured, which, I mean, yeah, I haven't been exposed to that sort of thing, so I don't really have opinions on it. But yeah, I mean, it's it's I think that the fact that it exists is really good. It's really good for the community to have this sort of organized competitive structure, because there's a lot of problems with trying to say that the ladder is sort of like the one competitive place, or that this, single, I mean, the DOC is great, but if you have just like one single elimination tournament a year, it's nice to also have a league going and have this sort of, competitive, structured thing at all times. And so, big shout out to the people who run the league, the people who have run the league and kept it going for a long time.
Yes, they're amazing. Do you have I saw I can't really tell. I felt like for as you have played 40 seasons, I mean granted you already said like you have always played in A, B, or C tiers, so I don't know. You have played against like less than 90 unique opponents. I can't tell if that's like it's probably normal since you don't like you don't drop down that far when you drop down. But are there people that you like players that you particularly enjoy playing against?
I mean, I would say that, like, there's certain players that, like, I don't enjoy playing against. Not like anything against those people, but there's certain people that just, like, they just have my number. Like, I don't know, like, RTT, for example, has just an insanely good lifetime record against me. And so, when that's scheduled, I mean, RTT is a very nice person, but the on the competitive side of things, there's some dread. I'm always happy to play against, like, Mick or VR Smith or J Nails. Like, I feel like those are people that I always have, like, really good matches against, and just there's always some high quality Dominion going on. But I think, like, that's true of, most people in the upper leagues, that, like, I'm sort of happy to see most people, unless I have that, sense of dread that my fate is sealed from the get-go.
And like I always ask people who they would like to play against that they haven't played already, but I feel like you are probably someone who like over time, like sooner or later, you do play like all the like better players who rise through the league tiers. But still, is there like anyone you would want to play against? I mean, maybe someone who doesn't play League, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. I mean, like, it'd be cool to play, to play against Steph. I mean, I've played, hundreds of ladder games against Steph or Wandering Winder, but I think it'd be cool to play them in like a, best of seven, best of six, type format as well, and see how that goes, because it's a different feeling than just like matching up from some ladder for some ladder games against someone.
Yeah. So, I think like in League you are one of the I don't know, like notorious players. You are like a very fast player and you are like very famous for like your quick resigns when like Spectre is like, "No, why?" And I feel like at the same time, you are not like, it's not like you're, or I have the impression that it's not like you're impatient, like specifically with like players who, and like most players play like slower than you, I would say. But maybe that's also like,
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no, that's a totally fair generalization. I mean, I'm definitely at the one extreme of play speed for sure.
yeah. But at the same time, I don't feel like you get impatient the same way that other fast players get impatient with their opponents. And I was just curious about like how you deal with like what do you do basically? Like you are so fast, and then like everyone else, like everyone you play usually is like takes more time. Is that does that take a toll on like your focus at all, or how do you? What do you do like during your
Yeah, I mean, I
opponent's
would.
turns?
No, I mean, I would say that, like, if I'm playing someone who I'm a lot faster than, I mean, if your opponent is taking a long turn, you can do your thinking on their turns, like to a certain extent, like, in the opening hand or something. If my opponent takes 5 minutes to figure out their buys, then I take 3 seconds because I spent 5 minutes of on their time thinking about it. And obviously, I mean, Dominion isn't a game with a clock, so I mean, there's nothing. It's just that's just pretty normal, I think. But yeah, I mean, I think that I mean, so this wasn't always the case. Like, I think when I first started playing at like the sort of like BA level of League, that like I did that it was hard to adjust to the different pace of play of some of the slower players. But it's just, I mean, I think that over time has just made me play slower when I play those people. So I think that a lot of the time I do play better. I think that this is like the secret that maybe I shouldn't be telling people in public, but I play in general worse against people who are also fast than people who play more deliberately.
Interesting.
I mean, it can like exacerbate tilt, I think. If you're having a bad match and your opponent is taking a really long time, then I mean, you just I mean, I don't know. My strategy in general for tilt is just like to just step away. I mean, there's nothing forcing you to be like sitting there looking at your computer screen. You can go like make a cup of tea or something, This is if anyone, I don't know if you were going to ask me this at some point, but this is one of the reasons that I sort of stopped recording, is just that I think that, I mean, recording is fun and things, and I think in a lot of ways it does make you play better, but it also can really sort of exacerbate this emotional aspect of tilt and like getting frustrated at slow play and things like that.
No, that's an interesting point, and I definitely agree. I feel like I think we may have like talked about this a little bit long ago already, where you said like doing commentary is also like for you kind of a way to like keep yourself in check, basically, and your emotions. And like I understand that, but at the same time, I do agree with what you just said, where for me personally, like if I am recording or I'm doing commentary, I know that people are listening to me, that kind of exacerbates my feelings like in the moment where I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm not playing well or whatever, and everyone can see that. And that, I mean, that's like a very personal thing that I'm dealing with, that I always feel like embarrassed, which is stupid, but I mean, I can't help it. Those aren't my feelings. So yeah, I can see. That makes a lot of sense to me. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can cut both ways for sure. I think you can, if that, being able to like talk through things, can help if you're in a situation where talking through things is helpful. Like if there's, if you're in a tough spot and there's like a difficult line, then it can be useful to just, like slow down and talk through it. But I mean, sometimes you're in a situation where just like there's like nothing you can do. And maybe, maybe it's not a situation where you want to resign because maybe, like your opponent's deck isn't perfectly reliable. So there's some chance that they dud or they make a mistake or something. And but it could still be, very it's those spots that are tough when you're recording, when you're just sitting there and you're not in like a great mental place and there's just like there's nothing, there's no like Dominion related things for you to do. It's just sort of you the coin is flipping in the air and you're just sitting there waiting for it to come down.
And like you're definitely like on one extreme end of the like resigned spectrum, right? Where it's like you are just within like the community, I guess, like you are the person that people know tends to resign super early. And you probably I don't think you how you would have seen that, but I just wanted to share with you that during one of your last matches, we were talking in spec chat, and Donald X was like, sure, Zerx like resigns a lot, but like here he is like still like always in the top tiers, so. And I thought that was like a great way to like look at that, because
Yeah, I've never like really understood. I will take it. I will take it at face value that I resign more than people. But like, I don't. I mean, I occasionally make mistakes and resign in positions where I shouldn't. But like, I mean, I think I'm just more willing to resign on like turn two. I mean, I resigned on turn two against Aku like two matches ago. I think that was completely justified. Like, the odds of me winning that game. So it's a position, like it was with the inherited hunter, and so he sees the hunter turn one, buys upgrade, and then sees the hunter and the upgrade again turn two, and I don't see the hunter until turn two, and I'm second player, so I'm sort of, I don't know, something like 2-3 turns behind just at the start. And Aku is a good player. Like he's a really good player. He's not going to. It wasn't like a super, I think, complicated board. It's like he's going to convert that kind of advantage, a very large percentage of the time. And I'm just, I don't. It's better for my mental health and my chances of winning the other games if I punt on that. Like Less than 5%, I would say, chance of me winning the game from that position.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like I am also like I get told a lot like I should not resign, so I try like to play things out, but then like you say, right? For me it's always I often feel like okay, this is gone now, and like obviously I'm not going about the game as analytical as most people and like including you, but
No, I mean, I play mostly on vibes, just for the record.
but I agree that it's like I'm also the type of person where like I want to like save my focus, my energy, like my mental like stability, I guess, and just move on. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, those have been tangents. Do you ever watch other players' matches? And if so, who do you like watching?
I mean, in the past little while, I haven't had very much time to watch people play Dominion. But I mean, I love mixed commentary. That's something that always is a high priority for me. So anything he's commentating or playing and commentating or commentating while not playing, definitely a higher priority for me. I think from a spectator perspective, the play style, the play speed things are probably even more important, to me than what I'm playing. So because sometimes it's just like as a spectator, I don't know. There are a lot of times when people are playing that I just don't understand like what they could be thinking about, which isn't like an indictment of them, but it's like that's the level of, I don't know, engagement in the game you need sometimes to even, be able to figure out what's going on.
What is your favorite card-shaped object, and what's on your like list? If there is anything on your like list. If not,
Yes,
just
I do have things on my like list. I have so my like list is Peasant, Exorcist, Puka, Swap, Souk, Innovation, Save, and Way of the Pig, all of which are deeply beloved to me.
if you had
If I
to
had to
pick a
pick one,
favorite.
I mean it's probably Peasant. Peasant is just like, I think it, out of all the cards, just having Peasant on the board adds the most to like what you can do with the kingdom, like the different directions you can go. So I think that's why it's been my favorite for a long time.
One of the things with Peasant that I often struggle with is, when do I know, like, if this is a kingdom where I need a teacher, or like, when is like a disciple enough? Like, I haven't been able to really figure that out.
Yeah, I mean it's a hard question because it's like I don't think it's something you should really think about on like a like kingdom by kingdom basis. It's like a game state thing, because teacher is always, well, it's not, maybe it's not always good. Teacher is almost always good. Like in, 90% of kingdoms, if you were just like, I'm gonna build as big as I can, then teacher's gonna help you get there. But sometimes it's just like, I mean, it's usually just that the turn where you put teacher on the mat is too slow for it to be good in that specific game state.
Yeah, I definitely have no overlap with your like list. That's fascinating. Like, I want to know, like, with every single card that you mentioned. I mean, swap, I understand. I mean, I kind of understand,
Yeah.
but like, can you talk about Way of the Pig, please?
I can talk about Way of the Pig. I mean, so Way of the Pig, I mean, okay, to be fair, I like Way of the Pig less since all the when in play effects got taken away. Because that let you do some really crazy things. But I like Way of the Pig because it's just like, I mean, it's the same reason I like Swap. Like Way of the Pig and Swap are very similar cards because they just let you just like shove everything into your deck and you have this crazy modality where it's like your deck consists of, just everything you can every action card you can possibly put in it, and you have these things that just make that like neutral at least on balance.
And Exorcist.
I mean, Exorcist is just like, I don't know. I mean, Nocturne has been my favorite set like since it came out. Just the spirits I find very very pleasant to play with. Ghost is a lot of fun when you get a good ghost board. That's one of my favorite. Like I would say my favorite kingdoms are the ones where like you have to work hard to make the engine work, and then you do something, like over the top. Because I mean, something like Ghost is super slow, but it is a very strong effect. So you can do some thing. I mean, obviously, usually you're not playing Ghost when there's some other village. But if Ghost is the only village, then I find it really satisfying to make it work.
Nice. All right. Well, if Nocturne is your favorite set, then do you have a favorite heirloom?
I have a favorite heirloom. My favorite heirloom is, I mean, it's really hard to pick. It's either goat or
It probably
secret lamp, magic lamp.
shouldn't it be like cursed gold if Puka is on your like list, or do we?
I mean, I do love cursed gold too. Yeah, I mean, I like. I mean, cursed gold does. There's some frustration involved with the cursed gold part of Puka. I would say that I like Puka more than I like cursed gold.
Yeah, that's fair. All
I mean, the best
right.
part of cursed gold is it means that you can always open Puka. But yeah.
Amazing. Do you have a favorite synergy?
Do I have a favorite synergy? Oh man,
It's a
that's
very
tough.
broad question, yeah.
It's a very broad question. Yeah. I mean, I would say my favorite synergy is probably like going off of the cards that I like the most. It's like Puka plus Knight cards. Like a Puka Exorcist open, that's just it's so pleasant. Just things you can do. I like things you can do like like villagers, knight cards, coin of the realm. Those are some of my favorite things. Getting around the like finickiness of having to draw a village in your opening hand to have your deck work.
Yeah. There was I don't remember what match that was, but there was like Academy supplies, and it was like you never have to worry about actions ever if you have like enough supplies and you have your academy, and then it's just go time. That was
Yeah,
fun.
like that sort of thing is cool. Yeah. Academy Slay. But yeah.
What about your dislike list and your ban list, and how do these two interact?
So my dislike list right now is Swamp Hag, Young Witch, Swindler, Cultist, Wild Hunt.
Wild Hunt, why?
So Wild Hunt is can be very unpleasant, just because it's like for a few things. One is that it just the problem is that like when you dud on a Wild Hunt, on a board where Wild Hunt is important, you are just like not only losing the fruits of all your all the normal things that you would get in your turn, the things you would buy or whatever, but also it's potentially this enormous point swing. Like if you have fire, like if you play three Wild Hunts and then you don't find the fourth one that you wanted to take the estate or whatever. So that's unpleasant. Games with Wild Hunt and no trashing are sort of extra, or no estate trashing can be really extra unpleasant because then you just have all these estates. No one likes to have a bunch of estates in their deck as a general rule.
It's true. And the ban list?
The ban list is Possession, of course, Smugglers, Mining
Settlers.
Village. No,
What?
Smugglers,
Oh,
Smugglers.
smugglers. Mining
I mean,
Village. What?
Mining Village, yeah. I mean,
Why?
Mining Village, okay. I mean, Mining Village, like, it just, so the problem with Mining Village is, let's say you draw your starting hand, right? And you have a Mining Village in it. You play the Mining Village to start your turn. This is like a very normal sequence of events, right? And then at that point, you're presented with a decision. You have to make this decision now. You have to calculate your entire turn. Like, if there
That's
is some chance
true.
that you can win by popping your mining village, you have to make the decision at that point. So I don't enjoy that aspect of it, having to like have your entire turn in your mind, like when you've clicked on the first card. So that's why I banned Mining Village.
I see.
Groom, yeah, just not a pleasant play pattern. Like groom green stuff. I was like sort of okay with it, and then basically when Freaky like labbed out that you can just win by just grooming like lackeys and estates, that's just by itself this monolithic strategy you can play. I don't know. It just it, it took it's not the kind of games I like playing, so I have Groom banned. And then Frigate.
I
Yeah.
see.
And then Landmarks, I banned Scouting Party. That's just too many decisions and shuffle triggers you have to think about for something that's very low impact. Arena, I don't know, just doesn't really do it for me. And then Banish. I mean, Banish is just like leads to some of the. I mean, I think I banned it. I had a league match against Tough Tay, and I had the like 5/2 Spices Banish combination, and I was like, "This is so stupid. I'm just gonna ban this card and not have to deal with it anymore."
Wow, okay, I see. So how does that, like, when do cards upgrade to your ban list, or do they ever, and when do they downgrade?
I
How
think
often
I
does
think
that
I'm out, I,
happen?
I'm I think I'm I think I'm out of flex slots. Like Frigate took the last one that I would ever change around, and so if in Rising Sun or whatever there is something that I would more urgently need to ban, then there is nothing really obvious that would come off. There's just five things that I'm very happy to never play with again, and the thing that dislike are just like. It maps out pretty nicely now because I mean I had tournament on dislike and now tournament's gone. So now it's just like, it's the four attacks that I don't really like mind that much, but I'm happy to see less, and then Wild Hunt, which we already talked about.
Knights are fine.
Yeah, knights are fine. Knights are like there's I think knights are, they lead to more interesting decisions than something like cultists, which you're usually going to play hard into from early on, or like swamp hag, where I don't know. It's like there's a decision there. It's like, do I buy is this card plus a curse worth more than nothing? And but I don't know. It's not a very interesting decision. But like I think knights, like the way you play around which knight is on top, when is it worth it to try and build to take multiple knights versus, I mean, knights are never a pile that's good to just, rush. I mean, sometimes there's something like Dame Anna on top and then you really want the first one, but they're not like a monolithic strategy by any means.
Okay. I have my traditional desert island question, but I have a feeling that you would bring Nocturne to.
I mean, I love not. I might take Renaissance. Renaissance is, I
Ooh.
think, like, it's like the. I think Renaissance is like the my favorite of the expansions, like, to like play with all the cards. Whereas Nocturne has like some things that I really love, and then there's also just stuff like Raider or whatever, where I don't think it adds to the desert island experience. I mean, Nocturne is it is the only set that has a card in it that you should never play. Just never play Raider.
But then it's not on your, it's neither on your dislike nor on your ban list.
Yeah, I mean it's like I
You
don't
just
subscribe to
ignore
this
it
like
when
yeah,
it's.
you should go. I don't subscribe to this like Tracer philosophy of, you should ban Peacestone and Raider and all this stuff. Like there are things that are worse than a nine card kingdom.
Amazing. And in Renaissance, you feel like every card is a good card, or like you have no Raider equivalent, and so
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's like, I mean, I was playing a lot around the time Renaissance came out. I think, like, I remember, like the Renaissance release tournament, just super fun. I think, I mean, it's a very powerful set, obviously. I like that. I like villagers a lot. I think there's just a lot of, sort of interesting things, like, Recruiter, Silk Merchant, Inventor. Those are all very nice cards that I enjoy playing with. Waggies.
Oh, I meant to ask. So you don't like Groom, but how does that compare to Ironworks?
I mean, that's not even like in the same conversation. Like Ironworks, is like Groom plus, three or four cost green card is just a monolithic thing on its own. Whereas Ironworks, the kingdom has to be pretty bad for that to just be like the one thing that you're doing.
So it's like the Groom Rush thing that bothers you.
Yeah, it's like the, it's the, yeah, the like plus one card, plus one action thing is just like, it's, it makes it's so much worse than plus one card on Ironworks.
That makes sense. Okay. We already talked a little bit about the World Cup and DOC, but do you play in other non-league tournaments at all, like in the mixes?
Yeah, I mean, I like a good mix. It's yeah, it's, that's something I like to try and make time for. I mean, there was a time like when RGT pointed this out once, where I signed up for literally every tournament that was posted on the Discord. I mean, I think now at that time of my life, scheduling was significantly easier than it is now. So I sort of have to pick my spots. Like, as we discussed, I'm continuing playing on League sort of indefinitely. So, I mean, yeah, I love mixed tournaments. Those are usually a good time. I miss like I mean there used to be Q Cup was a thing. There was like the The Pokemon gym tournaments. I don't know if you were around for those. Like,
I
I
was
sort of missed
not. What
those
was
like
that?
sort of unsk so the Pokemon gym tournaments where there was a certain, group of people who were the gym leaders, and they each had a badge, and the other participants had to defeat each of the gym leaders to get the badge. And the twist was that in your games with a gym leader, there was like a rule that the gym leader set. It could be like forcing cards, it could be like that you were forced, like the rats was in the kingdom and you were forced to open rats. I think someone did that. So that was, so I miss like those sort of tournaments that were just like not, more on the unscheduled things. Crew battle, that was that those there's a lot of good crew battles,
Yeah. What was
things like
the,
that. Yeah.
you mentioned a thing before, like a blitz tournament or something like that? What was that?
Oh yeah. I mean, so for the, I think I started it actually before we had the timer. It was like when there was, a lot of timer related discussion. I was like, look, okay, I'll just host a Blitz tournament. And the concept was of the first Blitz tournaments was just that you had to play as fast as you could. It was unenforced, but and then Gaskoo made a Blitz extension for the Shuffle It client, so then we could actually play with a real timer. For a while, and that was, so we had some. It was basically like Q Cup style Blitz tournament going.
I think. Oh, yeah. Do you have any recent memorable matches or moments that you would like to share?
Recent memorable matches or moments. I mean, I mean the one against J Nails recently, that was very nice, where we joined together in piling copper off of
Oh,
Deliver.
right. Oh, that was so fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just one of the ones. I mean, I felt bad because like I wasn't really paying attention to the like Galleria copper
Yeah.
deliver thing. That's like that's something J Nails would see. He's really good at seeing that sort of thing, so it sort of went by me. And then I just was like, I got in this position where he had delivered himself I
Yes.
don't know, like 18 copper or something,
Yeah.
and I was like, well, what do I do? And I had, my deck had like 17 money in it, so I just sort of sadly bought the two provinces and was like, well, hope I can hold on and
Yeah.
win somehow. And then the next turn, he just couldn't win, so he took a bunch more copper. And then, I mean, I had a good number of galleries in my deck, so I was able to pile the copper for a win. That's just one of those classic
Yeah,
Dominion experiences.
that was super fun. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of there's some older things that always stick out to me in terms of like the good Dominion stories.
Yeah, please.
There's like so there's I mean there's a match I played against. I think it was against Marcus once. This is one of my I think this is my favorite game of Dominion that I ever played. It was like so the engine was Storyteller, Contraband. There was, I think, Haunted Woods and Mercenary, but it was single terminal. And so I built like this enormous Storyteller Contraband Conquest thing. And that's like when I can do the big conquest thing, which is obviously not very often. That's one of the things that makes me the happiest. It was just it was a really interesting game just with these because the contraband was the only plus buy. So like what do you name? What do you do? Like I think he was going for provinces and stuff rather than conquest. So is the conquest going to come out? But yeah, that was that was a really good one.
Nice. I already forgot that contraband ever existed.
Yeah,
It's
I mean,
just
Contraband was a terrible card, and War Chest. I love War Chest. It does a really good job of preserving like the cruel part about Contraband. But yeah, the times that Contraband was good were very interesting.
Yeah, very, very memorable indeed. Yeah. Well, I think from my side that concludes the Dominion part of this interview, unless you have anything else about this wonderful game that you'd like to
No,
share.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Perfect. So, Dryopi, I don't know if that's like how you pronounce it now, sent very cute questions to you, but obviously I also would like to talk about you and music and DJing and everything. But let's start with with Dryopi, who said, how does one form a taste of such exquisite refining in electronic music?
First of all, that's the nicest thing that anyone's ever said about me. So thanks, Dryope, however you say that. So I guess, I mean, it goes back a long time for me. Like, the first CDs I purchased when I was young, this was like the first music that I owned, was like, so there was one copy of Dance Mix 95 made by Much Music. These are both like very Canadian things, so probably most people listening to this are not going to be familiar. But it's like, it was like a dance compilation, basically a very sort of like, I mean, it was mostly Canadian music, but like very in sort of the like Eurodance style. And then there was another one, Chris Shepherd's Pirate Radio. I can't remember the volume, which was a little bit more on the like, I don't know, like breaks, like UK big beat, you know, Fatboy Slim type of things. And so those were things that were maybe like very formative from my young years. And then, yeah, I don't know. I mean, eventually I went to university like starting in 2005. This was like around the time, like 2006, 2007, there was the big, like electro boom, I guess you could call it, like, you know, like Justice was huge, Boys Noize, Mastercraft, all those sort of things. This was like what existed right before dubstep, took everything over. So I started going to shows, stuff like that. That was a very, formative influence. But then, like, I mean, a lot of my taste has been shaped, you know, more to the, like, quieter, you know, ambient side of things based on. So I was working, like, a really kind of terrible job in a nightclub in Montreal after I finished my bachelor's. And, like, after when I was, you know, mopping the floors at 5 in the morning, I started listening to Black Noize by Panthère du Prince, which is this is like one of the quintessential. So there's like a type of music I call like German forest music. It's just this very sort of like peaceful, maybe slightly jangly, you know, bells. I don't know how to describe it really. Style of, you know, it's called dub techno. It's like ambient-ish techno, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. And so this was very calming for me after having a long nights in the nightclub with some very chaotic music, shall we say, going on sometimes. So those are sort of like some of the I don't know, tent poles, I guess, for me and my taste in electronic music and things like that. So I don't know how this is, how much of that is good advice for someone looking to develop taste. Although, you know, I mean, I know Dryope has very good taste himself, so I don't think he actually needs help in that regard.
They also wanted to know, so this is a bit more specific, but within Europe, which are the best, favorite, coolest music festivals the humble asker should aim to attend? I love these questions. And if you have any experiences to share.
Yeah, I mean, the two festivals I try and go to every year are Dekmantel and ADE, which is Amsterdam Dance Event. Those are both in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Part of that is just that I have friends in Amsterdam who like to go to festivals too, so I go there to see them. Those are just, you know, it's two, like, I mean, they're two different things. I mean, Dekmantel is like a, you know, quote unquote camping festival where you go and, you know, you're out in the fields and stuff, and then ADE is like a citywide party for a week in October. It's like the, you know, sort of music industry get together thing also. But yeah, I mean, Dutch festivals, you know, they are very solid in general, always very well run. You know, they have a great music scene there, so they always have good lineups. I mean, I think the thing that you don't get, that you get more at North American festivals, is, you know, like, people don't, like, go out Like their lives don't revolve. Like there's people you'll meet in North America at festivals who like, their lives revolve around this festival. I don't mean that in like a, sort of derogatory sense, just like, that they are very well prepared for this festival and it brings this sort of like spirit, which I've not seen at European festivals. Although, I mean, my experience with European festivals is, obviously somewhat limited. Like I've never been to any of the German festivals, which, could be a completely different experience.
I would not know because I'm not a festival person at all. Like I've been to two festivals, I think, over 10 years ago now, and it was fine, but it's just not my thing, so I wouldn't know. But I always like the people that I know that go to festivals, for them I feel like it's what you said about the US or like North America, where that's like the thing that they look forward to most, like during the year, and it's like they go in like huge friend groups, and it's having like the time of their lives, I guess. Right now it's Fusion, and the city is like so empty because everyone is at Fusion. So yeah, that's how I experience festivals. Basically, it's like the city is empty, and so everyone is gone.
I mean that's sort of the impression I got from about German festivals because I mean I know some people who go to like the German like metal festivals every year
Oh,
and yeah that sounds like quite the undertaking for sure.
yes, yes, definitely. Over on your server. I think an album club when I was still paying attention to that. But the thing that you shared was from one of the festivals, right? That was a DJ set from.
I shared a set of Evelyn Emerson, my favorite DJ at Deck Mantel, which I was at. I've been to a lot of her shows. I think like 10, something like that. I was counting at one point. She's very good, and she has a lot of sets on YouTube and SoundCloud and places for anyone who is interested. It's like she's the. I mean, it's become more mainstream now. I mean, when she sort of, when I sort of started paying attention to her stuff, like I don't know, like 7 years ago now, it was much more like techno DJing was much more sort of like regimented. There are more rules, like you can't have fun. Like it was much more of this sort of like stereotypical t techno attitude of like no, this is very serious, so we can't have like bright sounds or like you can't mix pop music in or anything like that.
Oh,
And
fascinating.
so Avalon has always sort of been just like, no, whatever, I'll play what I want, which is also very much my attitude about DJing, and that's the sort of music that I like to listen to. So it's very good in my opinion.
Can we talk more about you? Like, what is your personal like DJing history?
Yes. I mean, I really started learning how to DJ like in earnest, like during the pandemic, just because, sort of obvious reasons, I guess. So I had like, it was something I had sort of tried to pick up a bit in the past. So like my partner is, was is also enjoys DJing, and she had like a set of turntables for a very long time, and she had sort of tried to teach me, but she's very good at spinning vinyl, which is very different from spinning sort of digitally, and is quite difficult. And so I'd never really quite got to the point of proficiency. Oh, I mean, it was pretty far away from proficiency there. But anyway, so during the pandemic, I was like, maybe I'll get, relatively low end piece of electronic DJ hardware and start doing it. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's like, it's very powerful to be able to just like take two pieces of music and put them together and make it sound good. Like it's hard to explain how this works, but like, I mean, I DJ very Yeah, non-analytically, I guess that comes up again. Like, I just have a sense in my, I try to have a sense in my head of like what is going to sound together, and then I put it together. And if it works, it's great. And if it doesn't work, well, I mean, I have enough experience now to be able to understand the good ways to bail out of that. But yeah, I mean, I mix, mostly house and tech now, and I try, I like mixing, sort of some like indie pop and stuff like that too, to give it to give like the techno stuff more vocal elements. But it's just like it's a way to really like immerse myself in the music that I really love, which is what attracts me to it, I guess.
So do you also like, I don't think you streamed some sets, right? At some point. I don't think I've ever like watched some, but is that the thing that you still do regularly, or do you like play sets elsewhere, or is it just like you at home, or like just doing your thing and sharing it with people on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, I used to stream more. I sort of got off that. I mean, I sort of fell off of DJing for like, I don't know, like a year or something, just because of, I don't know. Sometimes you just need to take a break from things. But I've been back recently, like just playing for myself, practicing, trying to rebuild the skills and all the sort of intuitive knowledge of the music and everything that you need to be able to play live and try to avoid making as many embarrassing mistakes as you can. But I do sort of hope to start streaming again sometime soon. So anyone who's interested, I think my website still works. Let me check this right now.
Yeah, we can link to it.
Anyways, it is at least twitch.com. Yeah, tw yeah. The DNS still it does still resolve. So if you go to ugrit.com, it will be a link to my Twitch stream, which you can follow, and then you will get notifications when eventually I start streaming again. Also, you can join the Tune server. There's, I think, a link in the music channel of the Dominion Discord. Last time I checked.
Yeah, it's still pinned.
Yeah, feel free to join and talk about music and things like that.
Is the album club still going?
No, Album Club. We made it through one round, and I did not start it again for a second. Although, perhaps at some point I will give a probing inquiry as to who would be interested in participating in that again.
Yay. Yeah, I kind of needed a break from like all the music things, so I stepped away from that, but I still think like the idea is super fun.
Yeah, I think we could do it again and maybe have longer breaks between people's albums or something, because yeah, I think people fell behind, and that was sort of a problem. But it is a good idea. There's another music server I'm on where they do this regularly, and it's a nice way to find new music.
So, I'm very bad with music genres. Can you tell me what the difference is between house and techno?
Sure. So they are both styles of dance music which originated from like the Detroit and Chicago in the 80s, from basically people just playing around with the early synthesizers. Like you might have heard of like an 808 or something. That's like, some of these synthesizers from the 80s that people, they have these really like, I don't know, iconic sounds, like very sort of like simple, but also I don't know, basic types of sounds. And so people started making a lot of music with these. And basically, house was the genre which used a lot of like vocal samples, especially from gospel music, things like that. It was sort of like a, had a different like a, sort of uplifting feeling based on that. And then techno, as Jeff Mills would tell you, it was supposed to sound like outer space. So it is the one that sounds like outer space.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of overlap, and there's a genre called tech house, which and so a tech house is basically, I mean, there are like some sort of more music, other than this, sort of aesthetic difference, which is, I would say, the principal difference between house and techno. Like house is also like it has a different beat. Like the house beat is much more like, just like the 1, 2, 3, 4 beat, whereas, the classic techno beat is like the oomph-ahts. So you have like a more like 1, 2, 1, 2 type of thing. And so if you use techno sounds and you play them to the house beat, then you get what is known as tech house, which is often maligned by people, including me, because it is very boring. It's just sort of like you've taken the most boring parts of both genres of music and put them together. I would say that the recent trends in both techno and house are over the past few years are towards what I call house tech, which is like techno with the house sounds. So, it's the best of both worlds.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you? I'm just reminded of these like YouTube videos where you have like expert in whatever thing comments on depictions of said thing in like shows or movies. Do you have like when you watch TV or like watch a movie and there is like I don't know a DJ or whatever, do you? Does that happen? Like, do you, are those depictions, do you find the depictions like funny? Are they like realistic? Is that something that happens? I'm kind of, for some reason, I don't know. I'm thinking of Pitch Perfect right now, which is a movie I haven't watched, but I have watched like content about it where like the main character is introduced as like a DJ who like mixes like songs together, and I would be like so curious what you would think about the
I mean, okay. I mean, this is like, okay. So first of all, that is, I mean, I don't know what sort of like what level of, I don't know what level of knowing that is, but that is a distinction. There's a distinction between a DJ who mixes songs together and like a wedding DJ or something who plays a playlist or whatever. So, I mean, so yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with this movie anyway either. I think that like. I don't think that like the depiction of, like I don't know, like electronic music culture and nightlife and things like that is in general like really off base, just because I think that like for one thing, people in the entertainment industry are probably people who are highly, likely to attend raves and music festivals and things like that. So there's perhaps not so much of a knowledge gap. Also, I just think that like these are things that are in some sense designed so that like a music festival is designed so that it feels like a music festival when you're at it, It's like the reality, moves to meet the expectations.
I'm trying to think what like your common stereotypes are about like techno or like house or tech house or house tech festivals.
I mean, you live in Berlin. You should have some stereotypes about people who listen to techno music. That's like,
But then again, like I'm just not like I don't really go out because the thing about Berlin is it's everything is so late and I'm not like a night person at all. And like if the party starts at 12:30, I want to be in bed at 12:30.
Yeah, no, but this is the other thing of how Berlin works is that the parties start at 12:30 and then they go for,
A
24,
day.
48
Yeah,
hours.
that is
Yeah, I mean
true.
like there was one night I went out to a nightclub, a very very nice one on the boat on the river there. And so we got there at like 2 or something, and there was no queue. We just went right in. And then the place kind of gradually got busier as the night went on, and then when we left, which was I don't know around 8 in the morning or something, there was an enormous queue. Like that's sort of how Berlin nightlife works too. Like the I don't know if it's like a cultural shift, but yeah, it's I think there's definitely people who purposefully go to the rave, freshly woken up at eight in the morning after a good night's sleep.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I should probably like just go to the after hours and just like go there at 11 or something, 11 a.m. and then
Yeah.
yeah,
I mean,
that's
it's a
true.
you will meet interesting people there in general.
Yeah, I think I did send you the link to this like documentary about Berlin where a big part like after the fall of the Berlin Wall and a big part of it was about like the club scene. and techno and the Love Parade and stuff. And so that was interesting. I have also like since learned that was not part of the documentary, but I feel like it made sense in the context of the documentary that Berlin doesn't have like a curfew for bars and clubs and stuff. And so maybe that kind of caused or like that was like favorable for like this development of like there just is no end time to the party. I don't know how unique that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I mean, I think in a European con I mean, I don't know the historic context of like, in the early 90s or whatever, but I think, I mean, things were generally more permissive back then. Like, I mean, that was the time of the huge like free festivals in the UK and stuff like that, which eventually were sort of policed out of existence, and the Love Parade and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it is definitely a big part of the nightlife culture. It's pretty cool actually. Like, so I mean, Berlin of course is, trying to like institutionalize this part of the culture as like a protected, heritage, cultural heritage type of thing. Which I mean, that's good. I mean, I'm glad they're trying to protect it. I mean, it is important. But it's also like, so I mean, like Montreal now is sort of inspired by this. So Montreal has now loosened their regulations, so they're going to let there be nightclubs that are open 24 hours, so that they can get in this, sort of, I don't know, prestige nightlife culture thing like that.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
I have a good friend who is from Montreal, but he's a goth, so he worked like at the metal clubs, I
Yeah,
think. So your paths probably have not crossed, but
I mean, I have definitely been to the metal clubs in Montreal. I've been to a lot of venues in that city. At least a lot that existed when I was living there.
I think that was something else I wanted to ask about that, but maybe I remember it later. For now, I saw that you have participated in the Discord Music Brackets project from the very beginning.
Yes, I was very fortunate to notice that it was going on and get my 19 what was the first year, 88, 89, 89 submissions
89.
in under the wire.
Can you share some thoughts in general about the project? How did you like it?
Yes, I mean, the Music Brackets project was, I think, like one of the best things I have done in my life. It was an amazing experience. To, I mean, like to get to hear all this music that I would not normally hear, which is not, I mean, that part is like, I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate the contributions of my fellow Music Bracket participants who I greatly, respect and stuff. But also just like, I mean, for me to go back and do all the research, that was really cool. Like I learned so much from doing bracket research. That was extremely enjoyable and something that I might just, never do normally. Because normally, I mean, I'm trying very hard to like swim, keep on top of all the current new music which is coming out and which might be good. So that takes up a lot of listening time. But I dedicated a bunch of it to Music Bracket listening and research and stuff like that, and that was amazing.
I agree. I feel like I joined too late because first of all I didn't understand what was going on. It felt kind of like overwhelming, just the frequency of the thing. But yeah, I agree, like for the couple of brackets where I like put more effort into research, my experience was definitely similar.
Yeah, I mean, you were a definitely a valued contributor there. Got some cool German music from you that I remember.
I did a little research on this and I did share it with you because I wanted to see how many brackets you won. And we saw that you have excellent taste in music, and obviously, like this is not for people who know you and who have played the brackets with you. The songs that you submitted that ultimately won don't necessarily reflect, I think, like your favorite music. Maybe it's just like a handful of songs that would fall into that category, but obviously, like that just reflects the participants more than it reflects you write, because like the songs that you submit, something like California Dreaming or Sweet Dreams or whatever, right, is like, or Tainted Love, is like a thing that you submit. And then like, I guess where I'm going with this is like, I enjoyed the brackets for getting to know new music, right? But then like in the end, the things that like got far or that won were more, I felt like more often it was just like this kind of mainstreamy music. So I guess
the things that won were usually the things that you would expect to win. Like,
Yeah. How did you feel about that?
So I think this was the other great pleasure of the music brackets, which I did not mention earlier, which is that like I fought I don't know how long we were doing the brackets, like 3.5 years or something like that in the end.
So long.
But anyways, I fought a war for 3.5 years against people's taste.
Yes.
And I don't know if I would say I won, but I made progress, you know, like. Like the brackets of the first ones, like, I don't know, maybe not 1989 so much, but like the second one was like 2014, and like, you know, the my songs just got slaughtered and, publicly disparaged by, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, not that I have a problem with that, but, you know, like I through exposure and, that sort of thing, you know, gradually pushed people's taste to the point where they, you know, opened their minds to enjoying some of the strange music that I like to submit. So that was also something that made me happy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like it's just, I thought like for the time that I participated in it, it was definitely a great way to kind of get to know people too, right? Where music is just like such a subjective passion, I would say. And so it was very nice to like kind of get to know, okay, like you are like the electronica person, and then I don't know, Mort does like the metal and everything that has to do with that person. And Elatar is the, I'm going to find like the weirdest things person.
Yes, Elatar, you know, took that very seriously.
Yes.
I don't know how much effort it actually took him, but he succeeded by great strides there.
Yeah, I just think he doesn't sleep. So I think he has a lot of time to look at.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be good for, you know, having time for hobbies and stuff if you don't sleep.
Yeah. Of the list of your winning songs, which one is your favorite?
I think my favorite is the one that is dearest to my heart that it won the bracket is Frontier Psychiatrist, just because like that album is, I think, you know, one of the great works of art of human society. I don't know, like the album is, you know, it's this, if for people who haven't heard it maybe, so it's this Plunderphonics thing, so it's, you know, made up of, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of samples, like the guys who made it had, you know, this enormous record collection and everything, and spent years, you know, splicing this together, and they released it like it came out in 2000. And it's sort of just this distillation of everything of the 20th century into this album, which is like, I don't know, sort of beautiful and uncategorizable. Frontier Psychiatrist is like the like sort of like catchy single that like sticks out of the middle of the album. Anyways, but so I mean, I was happy that you know, something from an album which I love that much won. I mean, the song that I like the most that won would definitely be Once in a Lifetime. But I mean, that was just like, you know, it didn't mean that much to me that won specifically, because first of all, it was very obvious that was going to win. Everyone likes the Talking Heads in that group of people, at least. There's a strong
At that time, contingent. I haven't grown up with them, and like the things that I was exposed to in the brackets did not kind of endear them to me, I guess. But yeah, I share your opinion with like that they were very popular in with the musicologists. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I can't, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I can't really explain like why I like the Talking Heads so much, or like why they're so popular with that, you know, type of person who was participating in the music bracket, like the majority of them. But I don't know. There's something about it that's a bit ineffable, I guess.
What was your favorite bracket? Is that even possible to say?
My favorite bracket, yeah, it'd be. It, I mean, you'd have to, I mean, I think like my favorite brackets, like to do, I mean, there's different things. Like, I mean the, you know, the bracket that like Once in a Lifetime, or not, sorry, that Frontier for Psychiatrists won was like the one that made me the most happy at the end of it. Like the ones that I like doing research for the most were like the older ones generally, I don't know, like the oldest one, like 1925. Like I listened to a bunch of operas, which I love doing. That was great. Some of the like, you know, early 90s ones, like you know, listening just to like 80s, 90s, like electronic music, stuff like that I hadn't really delved into, like the early parts of that. That was really cool to do research for too. I think like in terms of music quality, of like the quality of the bracket as like a, you know, thing that I listened to every song of, I think that like definitely, you know, sort of maybe like mid 60s was the peak of that. So yeah, I can't pick for one thing, because things have sort of blended together a little bit since it's been a bit of time since we finished.
Yeah that was like a very strict schedule too, so it was kind of done with one bracket and immediately go into the next, and so I have my experience was similar, but I also like I took breaks in between. I was like, I can't
yeah, I mean, it's totally fair. It was a big time commitment for sure to participate in all of them.
Yeah, but I can see how like when you have been there since the beginning, how that would have been like difficult to maybe like take a break in between, because you're like, ow.
I don't know. I mean, it was just like that was my main hobby pretty much for a while. Because as more brackets went on, I spent, I think, just progressively more and more time doing research until we got the near the end, and I just had everything filled out.
I wish I had gotten into that earlier. But it was a good run. It was very fun. Did you, I know I said, like, what was your favorite side bracket? I don't even know if you participated in the side bracket. Did you participate in the side brackets?
I participated in maybe not every single one, but very close to every single one.
Oh, perfect. So, do you have a favorite one?
What's my favorite side bracket? I liked 3-4 bracket a lot.
Oh, I like, missed that. Okay.
Yeah, that was fun. I don't know. It's just like, sort of orthogonal to the things that were going on in the other side brackets, which tended to be more like theme based or things like that. I also, I guess, I really liked the like you know, the hot takes brackets. Like we did one end of 2022, end of 2023. That was cool, just because I think that the state of music in right now is very, very, very good. Like the past like 3-4 years in music have been some of my favorite years in music. So it was cool to see a bunch of new stuff also.
How, this is a very general question, but like how do you go about like finding new music, like contemporary music? Is that, yeah.
Yeah. So I read Resident Advisor pretty religiously. That's like, I don't know, online, it's a website where they post, where they review music and they write articles about music, focused on like most, like centered on techno, I guess. So yeah, you know, find some good stuff there. So they try really hard to popularize like African music in particular, like African electronic music.
Oh, nice.
So there's a lot of cool things like from there that I would never have heard of probably otherwise. I don't know. I also, I mean, I follow a lot of labels on Bandcamp, and so, you know, get notifications when labels I like release music and learn about that. I mean, I have to. I mean, so the real center of my music taste. Like, this is the one thing. Like, I guess this goes back to Drive's question about where my music taste came from. So back in the sort of late 2000s, early 2010s, there was what are known as music blogs, which are places where people posted like zip files of MP3s for people to download music. And so this was a exciting way to be exposed to people's taste and also to not have to pay for music, which was important to me at the time as a impoverished student. But anyway, so one of them, which is called nodada.tv, still exists, keeps on going to this date. I have no idea who runs this blog, but they have very good taste, or I don't know. I mean, they cast a wide net, but in general, I will listen to everything that they post that has like genre tags, which is sort of compatible with what I like, and so I find a lot of out there music just from whoever is doing the, whoever has created nodada.tv. A shout out to them.
Yeah, I absolutely forgot about music critiques or album critiques, like the whole genre of critiquing media. I'm like I don't know, when I had a dip in listening to music, and then at some point I got Spotify, and then I got into listening to music again, and then I stopped doing that, and then I started I joined the Music Brackets project, and then I listened to music again a lot, and it made me very happy, and I saved some of the stuff, but personally I just don't. And I guess because I don't listen to radio anymore, so I don't really I'm not really up to date because I'm not seeking that out. Obviously, as you pointed out, if you are interested in that, there are ways to keep up to date with new music and stuff. And for me, it's just Spotify, kind of knowing what I like of music, and then sometimes they're like, hey, this artist has a new album, but yeah.
I mean, the algorithm does occasionally give good stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think like I mean the most valuable thing in the world is like knowing someone who has good taste in music and they give you
Yes.
music. This is like
Yeah.
completely invaluable. So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Absolutely. Also, when I was younger, what we would do is just share a lot of music, right? Where you kind of like what you described with the music blogs, but more personalized, right? Where you had your USB thing or an external hard drive or something, and then you would visit your friends and just collect whatever they had of music, and
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of that too. It was yeah, important, yeah.
and then kind of see what you liked of that or not. But yeah, you're right, it's better to, if you have someone where okay, they tend to like the music that I like, so plug their brain. Shout out to Mort, by the way, who curated a playlist for me, I think 2 years ago or something. That is amazing. And I curated a playlist in return, which I don't think was anything interesting to them at all, but that's yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We as a group of people, focus, who came together for the music brackets, we should, try and share music more often because, yeah,
That's true.
I do miss that aspect.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of. No, I do. Yeah, it was such a great project for sure. Yeah. You mentioned that you like listening to opera. Is there any, what other what music do you like in general, apart from electronica?
Apart from electronica and apart from opera, I mean, I would say that like, I mean, a lot of my favorite bands are from this like Canadian indie scene, I guess. Like, I don't know, like Sunset Rubdown, Destroyer, New Pornographers, stuff like that. There was definitely a moment for the Canadian indie scene, which I think various cuts to government programs started to strangle out starting I don't know, like 2010 or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, like electronic music is like a very broad and deep thing, which I spend most of my time immersed in. I mean, like, so I mean, I think that, I mean, okay, so my general critique of, contemporary rock music is that, like, around, yeah, I don't know, maybe like, so starting with, I mean, when I started to notice it, at least, was with this album by Foxygen. What's it called? It's like Take the Kids Off Broadway, right? Which is an album that I really like, but the guy is just like trying really hard to be Jim Morrison. And then like on their next album, he is just like leaning into it like all the way. And I feel like there was a period of time around then that just like all the sort of rock bands were very nakedly like wearing their, this is like, whatever, I'm trying to be the Doors, I'm trying to be the Stones, whatever, whatever. And I feel like that was the point where I thought that a lot of rock kind of lost its like creative, I don't know, vitality to me. I mean, this is also, I mean, in under the background of, at least in like the North American context of, rap music and hip hop, surpassing rock as the, continuing to surpass rock as the, most popular and culturally central genre of music. But anyways, yeah. So I mean, I think things have sort of turned around. I don't know. I mean, I listened to some of the like, I don't know even what to call it. It's sort of it's more like a singer songwriter. Like I don't know, like Wet Leg, like that was an album that I really enjoyed, thanks to I think Vilified posting it in some sort of music bracket related context. I mean, I don't really know what to call it. It's just sort of like rock adjacent singer songwriter music. That's something that seems to be coming back, which I enjoy, but I don't like have as many sources for that sort of thing, so it doesn't come up.
Maybe it's easier to ask you if there are like what type of music or like what genres you don't like.
What do I not like? I mean, in general, I don't like things that are very focused on lyrics. So like, I mean, I like a lot of like rap and hip hop, but like the stuff that's just sort of like very focused on the words is just doesn't do it for me. Yeah, metal's never, I mean, I like some metal, but like in general, I don't know, like the I like the more instrumental part, like the classic, screamy or growly or whatever metal vocals don't really do it for me. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, there's not like a lot of music where I'm just like, no, this is categorically bad.
Have you ever listened to French or German rap music?
Yeah, I mean, I have some friends who are really into that. It's good. It's not something that like, I mean, the French rap that I really liked is like more like Algerian, I guess, on the Algerian side of things. I mean, this is something I'd never really listened to before, but I was driving in a car with a friend recently, and he played a bunch of Algerian rap. I was like, this is pretty good. So I did note no, I Shazammed it as we were driving to listen to it later, although I've not got around to that. Yeah, I mean, German rap. I don't know. I find it sort of hit or miss. Like sometimes it's, I find it tends to be sort of like as an outsider who often doesn't understand what they're saying. Sometimes it's sort of silly, and sometimes it's sort of silly in a good way, and sometimes it doesn't hit for me.
No, I totally get that. But it's interesting that you mentioned that with the lyrics because I also don't really listen to a lot of hip hop, but like if I do, then it's like a very like specific niche that is like German like leftist hip hop. And they're like I fully appreciate like this genre because it just is, it has such a such energy and and like such emotions I feel like. And then I'm like, oh, now I get it. But then like a lot of like I don't know, like English hip hop or like French hip hop. I think French hip hop is like French rap is nice just because the flow is so I really like the flow. And in English it's just like I don't, it's just too fast. I don't understand it and then like it doesn't pack the same punch, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, English is not like a beautiful language. Like, no one's like excited to go listen to an English opera, I don't know.
Oh, you listen to opera because of the lyrics? No.
No, I just mean like not. I mean, it's not a beautiful language in the sense of like the sounds,
Yeah.
I don't know, like German, French, Italian. I find these languages. I mean, I don't know to what extent it's because I don't under I because I
Yeah.
understand the words less, but
Yeah,
yeah.
No, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Like, I find I love music a lot. I should listen to more of it.
It's a good thing to do. I mean, yeah, I try to do it as much as possible.
Besides music, do you have time for other other hobbies?
Yeah, I mean, so other hobbies. I mean, like I so my board gaming has sort of transitioned into playing Magic the Gathering, which I don't know. I
Ooh.
mean, it scratches a lot of the same itches as Dominion does. So yeah, I mean, I have a group of people we play sometimes, and I also play online to a certain amount.
Oh, fascinating. So, sorry. But you played Dominion first, and then you played, and then you started playing Magic, or?
Yeah, I didn't start playing Magic until like I don't know. Yeah, it was yeah, no, it was also during the pandemic. That was a good time to pick up new hobbies.
Interesting. Okay.
It was just because like, I mean, there's like an MTG channel on the Dominion Discord. And when people talk about things like that, like a game or something, and I like don't really like understand what's going on, it becomes a very interesting puzzle to try and figure it out. So I was like reading Magic cards, trying to like piece together the game mechanics from them. I don't know. This is a really fun thing to do if you ever get the chance. Like one of the most fun experiences I've had in my life was, so there's like an online implementation of Innovation, like the board game. And Innovation is sort of like a I don't know. It's a bit of a crazy game. Like like effects can sort of cascade, basically. And I sat down with my friend, and I was like, because I knew about this because it was also on Isotropic, right? Anyways, we were like, okay, we don't know what this game is, but let's just try and play it using this online implementation and try and figure it out as we go. And that was just a blast. So if you ever get the chance to do something like that, I can recommend it. But anyways, yeah, so that's sort of why I started playing Magic the Gathering. And I don't know, I mean, like, there are certain things that I like, they're both deck building games. There's certain things I like more about Magic in comparison to Dominion. Like I really like, so in Magic they have the mulligan, which means that like, when you draw your starting hand and if it's bad, you can like put it back and draw another hand. And then eventually you have to put one of those cards back. But this is like, once you get used to this, it becomes very frustrating in Dominion to be like, I have this terrible 5/2 or whatever. I mean, I'm just stuck here.
That's amazing. So is Magic your favorite game besides Dominion?
I mean, at the moment, like in my life, I have, my other big passion other than Dominion is roguelikes. So I've played like, I mean, I am very, very good at like NetHack kind of style roguelikes. I spent a very long time immersed in these. I don't know how to explain these achievements in terms anyone else who's not familiar with them will understand. I ascended a cat. So there's a game called Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup where you can play as a cat. As a cat, you have no ability to have weapons or armor. You're very weak. But I mean, you do have 9 lives, but this is not very, very helpful. But anyways, I beat the game with a cat, which is quite difficult, or at least I found it quite difficult. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad I could share this achievement with the world.
I dare every listener who knows what Sirius was just talking about to like DM him and send congrats.
Yes, I would appreciate that. Yes.
Because it is not me, but now I have learned a thing. Perfect. Rosie sent in a very important question because, as some people know, but probably not everyone, you are the emoji manager of the Dominion Discord. So Rosie wanted to know what your favorite emoji is.
My favorite emoji, I mean, I think it's It's probably Bonfire Bat Lady. That one's just such a
Oh,
classic. Like,
absolutely.
it expresses so much in so few pixels. Like, it also has a very evocative name, which is important. Like, it's very important to choose the right, like text strings that go with the emoji. This
Yeah.
is a critical part of emoji management.
I feel like it is also oh yeah, we have to talk about names. That's a good point. Oh, that's so good. I have so many questions about the names. Why didn't I think about this before? Anyway, before
Of course,
I
I'm
come to
happy to talk about emoji,
that. Amazing. I feel like the Bonfire Bat Lady is maybe like whenever a new server is made that is somehow related to Dominion, if only because there are some people who know each other from the Dominion, like from the main server. Bonfire Bat Lady tends to be like the first custom emoji that
Yeah, for
gets
sure. I
added
mean,
because
that
it's so
one's just
important.
critical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So well done there. Yes, amazing. Oh, it's so good that you brought this up. Let's talk about emojis. Because I do enjoy every once in a while to look at the list of names for emojis, and some I just don't understand.
Of course, I mean, I should be able to explain the ball.
Because also sometimes, have you ever played just one on the server?
Yeah. I definitely played that.
I feel like that's amazing. Especially like when you get to use the Dominion emojis. Like it's like so satisfying, I guess, when you get to, I guess like that
Right.
is the context in which I no, that can't actually be true. I love the monkey. I love the Sparkle Pig. They're also great. Sparkle Pig is one where I would like to know a little bit of the history because it's one that makes me like very, very happy personally, but I would like to know like how this came to be and what it was like meant to be for originally.
Sure, yeah. So Sparkle Pig, I think it was originally a cave creation. He was the one who named it Sparkle Pig, I guess based on the magical connection with the Enchantress. And so I mean I'll like to so my role as emoji manager basically came apart came to be because I was the person on the server who was dedicated to sort of defining the semiotics of each emoji, and of I compiled the semiotics.txt, which I think should still be pinned in
Yes.
the server emoji. Yes. Although I have not updated it to account for the fact that we tragically lost some emoji recently as we went down a server boost status. But anyways, yeah. So I think that what the pig means, at least to me, is just based on the fact that the pig just looks very happy. It's just sitting there. You could just it's sitting there and observing. You could just add this little thing to people's messages, and there is the contented pig.
Yes, it is so cute. I love it so much. Well, I'm
Yeah,
glad.
no, that's also one of my favorites. Definitely up there.
Oh, I just see that Swashbuckler is supposed to be like a kiss. That's interesting. I was not aware.
That's always how I interpret that facial expression, like the like air kiss,
Oh, the lion has seen some shit.
The lion has definitely seen some shit, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, some of them are just like enigmas to me. But like ooh, Chinese. But yeah, like the the explanations are so good. Kudos to you. Like
Thank you. Yeah, I mean,
it's so fun.
it's evolved over the years from me writing down explanations for emoji that already existed and how they are used, or at least how I used them, to now. I mean, when new expansions come out, there is a secret emoji council which selects art, which will make good emoji, we think. And then the semiotics and the Dombot explanation is updated in order to provide a suggested use. So it's some of it is definitely speculative in terms of what how to use them.
Some things like needlessly sexy, right? Like the vampire art is like obviously a reference to things that you wouldn't like. I had someone explain it to me, and now I understand that, but it like it's also that's
Yeah,
great.
that one's deep lore now, I think. Yeah.
My cabbages, amazing. Just look at this beautiful thing.
I mean, yeah, my cabbage is like that. Like the art for that one is one of my favorite Dominion arts, just because there's so many cabbages. It's amazing.
Oh, they are perfect. You are doing a great job there. I
Thank
should
you.
have prepared better for this. Right now, I'm just like scrolling through it and marveling at the beauty of this.
That's all right. I'm also just scrolling through and marveling at the beauty of all the emoji.
Oh, Bright and Happy, I think, is the other one. Like Bonfire Bat Lady and Bright and Happy are the ones that I always like to.
Bright and Happy is one of my favorites. That that's the one that I made that I'm the proudest of, I think.
Well, good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love, well, I guess Sparkle Pig and Monkey Rager, like my favorites. Okay, well, trying to, what else? Oh yeah, your three favorite discard channels of the main Dominion Discord server.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I mean, music, obviously, I have to give a shout out to music. Many great times in that one. Number two, definitely language. This is something I enjoy recreationally talking about language. That's another. I don't know if I call it a hobby or whatever, but I love like etymologies. I learned a good one. I learned a good one today, actually. So the etymology for average is completely insane. Average is from a French word that means damage to a ship.
How? Why?
Because okay, so the use of the word came from, if your ship was damaged or like the merchandise on the ship was damaged, then you had to, like, for I don't know, like, liability or insurance purposes, basically determine, who owned which proportion of the merchandise on the ship. And so this was like this accounting of was the origin of the use of the word average to mean, mathematical things. But yeah.
Oh, fascinating. Cool. So that's two.
That's two. Yeah, my third. Yeah, I don't know. Probably. I mean, I enjoy Kingdom Analysis a lot. I mean, to pick one, actually, Dominion related one. Yeah, that when I was more actively trying to improve my Dominion play, that was a very helpful place to talk about kingdoms and stuff with people and get opinions.
I had a question about like what is the best way to improve, but did you was that like how you went about it? You just like read the analysis channels and did you watch like other people's videos or how did you or just like
Yeah,
read a
I mean,
little over?
I think that's the best way, really. Like the way I proved the most was watching Mick, watching Psychomatic, especially. Like his videos especially were just the best at just like going into the detail about all the things that you can think about in the course of your turn. Which, I mean, when I started like sort of playing competitively, I had no idea about a lot of, I had never, like the concept of like shuffle management, for example. Like the first time that someone talked in spec chat about the decision whether to trigger or not trigger a shuffle, it just like, it blew my mind. Like, things like that you
Totally.
won't, you would, well, I mean, I don't know. I at least would have never thought about that you could think about a lot of these things if I didn't hear like the very best players talking about them.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so that concludes the questions, except who would you be interested in hearing an interview with on the podcast in the future?
I would nominate Tracer. I think Tracer is one of the best and most interesting minds in Dominion, so that would be my pick.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for taking all this time and sharing all these things.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Nice. So, goodbye.
Goodbye.
And that's it for this episode. Thanks again to Xerix. Thank you to Razi and Dryopi for sending in questions. You can find all the music links in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in. You can find me on Discord for feedback. I am at Strumpf. Don't forget to DM Xerix some congratulations for beating a game as a cat. And I'll catch you all next time. The game has ended. Bye!